Hello, and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday about lunchtime and also available at your leisure at voiceofvashon.org/realtalk. Real Talk is the show where we explore questions large and small. And are there any small ones these days? We really don't know. But today I am delighted to have with me Dr. Marilyn Cohen. She is the director of the Northwest Media Literacy Center in the University of Washington and also the director of Action for Media Education. Welcome, Dr. Cohen.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure and a real necessity for us, I think, to understand how the media works us and how we can work it. But before we go there, would you please explain to our audience what media literacy actually is?
Well, it's a term that is used in various ways, in various places. Basically, when we talk about literacy, in general, we talk about having teaching children to read and write. And there's also looking at their mathematical abilities, helping them to become better mathematicians. But we're going to focus on the reading and writing part of literacy. And typically, we've talked about print media when we think about literacy, reading and writing. But we now have a major new text that is dominating our world, and that text is found in the media. And so we're trying to teach young people to become literate in the use of media, all forms of media, from the things that they see all around them in billboards and bus signs and brochures and advertisements of various kinds to all the many pieces of information they find online and all the ways they interact through social media and create their own media. All of these are addressed in media literacy.
You know, I think most people, when they hear the term media, think news media. But yes. that's not all we're talking about, is it? There are so many different media, as in a single medium to plural media. There are so many different avenues of media. How does one understand how each of them works? And is that what you're exploring and teaching people?
Yes, because each, as you've pointed out, there are many different forms of media, or there are many different mediums, and each one of them has their own special way of conveying a message. And there are certain tools, ways to understand that tool, the conventions, the things you can do with a particular tool, and some of the things you cannot do. Every one of them has advantages, and it also has disadvantages. And it's important in understanding how to be media literate to understand the tool you're trying to use. So that's very much a part of media literacy.
So there is using the tool to learn. In other words, there is consuming the tool, and then there is using the tool to communicate.
Right.
What's the difference? How do we behave differently in each of those practices?
Well, we want to teach people to become critical consumers of media, but we also want to teach them how to become creative and critical, use critical thinking while they're also using creative thinking to create their own media and as they're communicating. So when you are communicating, you need to think about how you're communicating, what it is you want to communicate, and reflect on what it is that might be the implications of what you are communicating to the audience and who is the audience. Is it the whole world? Is it a closed group? Who is it that you're communicating to? So there are some questions that we try to get, impress upon young people. And the first is when you are trying to teach them to become more critical consumers is who created the message. And this becomes a very important question, never more important than it is at this moment.
That's for sure.
We're thinking about our health and well-being, which I can't think of an issue that would be more important than that. Who is it that we're going to for information about what to do, and where is this information coming from? And there are rumors and myths all over the internet, as I'm sure everyone who's mm-hmm. listening is well aware, including one I heard just yesterday about putting a blow dryer up to your nose and trying to, that this, on the hottest setting, this would kill the virus that is lodged up in your nasal cavity. So you can find any number of things to do in people, depending on whether they're considering this source as credible or they're just grabbing information off the net in desperation. And it's really important to think about, where is this coming from? And start with, rather than reading the information, look at the source. What sources am I going to get information? And right now, public health sources from our government and from public health agencies and people who've been researching this for all their careers at universities and other institutions are important sources to try to ferret out what information we should be paying attention to.
Well, and I think there is a dearth of trust as well, trust of those government institutions created primarily by a lack of or a delay in information and support. So how does one know who to trust or what information to trust?
Well, I think our longtime sources for this information have always been the CDC. It has been like Department of Health at our own state Department of Health is issuing guidance. I do mean public health government agencies, and certainly the World Health Organization. These have always provided guidance on to people in the health professions. And I believe that even today, though the information is changing continuously, that our health, public health resources, the scientists who are issuing their findings through public health, I think these are our best resources at the moment. But we need to turn to science, and science is going to guide us at this critical time.
What about information from other countries that have experienced, if we're talking about the pandemic at the moment, China being the first to have gone through, or at least we think they're way ahead of us in terms of having the experience. What are we to do with information that appears to come from other countries that may have experience that could help us?
Well, again, that information is being offered through so many different kinds of resources. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to look at where this information is coming from. What is the source? And again, I would turn to our own public health resources. There are our own scientists who are vetting this information and releasing some of it, and you know, talking about their own contacts with people that they work with, other scientists in China or other places in the world. But again, it's public health and the science community which is releasing information, and rather than going through all the third-party resources or third-party sources that are interpreting this in a variety of ways, and then we see all of the myths and other information that's out there. And there's a wealth of interpretations about what all this means from the information we're seeing from other countries. But we don't know what part of that, we don't know where exactly that is coming from. Again, what is the source?
So what do you tell people about how to identify the source, particularly young people? So I'm on Facebook and my friends are telling me that this particular notice from this particular source is the absolute truth and I have to share it with all my friends. What is the first thing I should do?
The first thing you should do is take the information and before you do anything with it and try to find out what is the source. How can you determine the credibility of that source? Where is it coming from? So, for example, if it's with the pandemic and it's someone who is spreading the information about the blow dryer, now where did that come from? Is it, where did they find this information? How can you determine the credibility of that resource? And very often it's just from another place on the internet where they saw something and it becomes breaking news and it goes viral. And any number of things go viral very quickly. So, and we do know that youth in particular consider the advice of friends and family as a very valid source of information, perhaps the most valid. So one of the things that we all have to impress upon our young people and at times on ourselves as well, in times of desperation like this, is to sit back and realize that media does draw on our emotions. I mean, first off, we have an emotional attachment to some of these things that we see, especially messages about this particular issue, to draw back and try to let reason take in here and think about how can I find out if this is valid, reliable information? Where does it come from? And can I find credible scientific information that validates this?
So does
before passing it on.
Yeah. Does it make sense then for anybody who's looking at information they see on social media, primarily Facebook or Twitter or one of the others, to, before you share it, go to the internet in general and search that particular subject? Would that help us find the source and its validity?
Well, to go to your public health sources and search there for that particular piece of information. Are they releasing that piece of information? Where did it come from? If you can't find any reference to it, then you might wonder. Medline is a medical search that is really valuable to use in situations like this. It's a health resource, and you can see what kinds of studies have been done around this particular issue. So, going to the scientific community and going to our public health resources that are only talking and or relying on the information that they put out as being based on science.
We are talking on Real Talk with Dr. Marilyn Cohen, who is director of the Northwest Media Literacy Center and director of Action for Media Education. Dr. Cohen, a little bit ago you mentioned that the media, the social media particularly, well, all the media really, work on our emotions. And it's been recognized that we tend to live in social media tribes. What are the dangers of staying within your tribe? And what are the risks and what are the benefits?
Well, of course, once you find that your tribe or silo, they, of course, confirm your beliefs and your values, and can very much perpetuate how you look at the world. But in order to become media literate, we have to also encourage people to look more broadly outside of their particular silos, and that's what this is about, to try to get them to ask more questions. And some of the questions that we need to be asking is, of course, we've been talking about an important one, is who created this? Who's the source here? What kinds of information are we passing around? And realizing that people interpret things differently. So in your particular tribe or silo, people may share the same values and the same points of view, but are there other points of view? And think about what other people with other points of view might say about the information that's being passed around in your particular silo. And this is a very useful question. So being willing to go outside of your silo to find what else is being said can be a very challenging thing to do, but it also allows you to do something that we encourage youth to do, that we're training youth to do, and that is to analyze and evaluate the information that is being passed around in your silo. What kinds of things are most likely to be accepted there, and what kinds of things might you reach out and try to figure out if there are other points of view and how others might view this. And we do know that media are interpreted very differently, messages are interpreted very differently depending on your beliefs, your background, your experience, whether you're a white person, a person of color, values, again, your points of view, all of these. And a big important question that I always stress to people who are teaching media literacy is ask people to think about who's the target audience for this message. And that's a fun one to do with your children. Who are they trying to reach? And you can, and also, what's missing here? What am I not being told? What would I like to know? Or what kinds of things do we keep harping on? And what kinds of things do we not talk about? And it's a useful thing even on for your TV to look at different stations and look at one news report and look at the different ways that the news is being covered. In different on a particular piece of information.
So let me ask you this question, because what you're talking about is critical thinking and sort of objective research, which flies in the face a bit of the whole idea of social media tribes as well as basic belief systems. And that brings me to question how our educational system has worked against the notions of critical thinking and moving outside your comfort zone, essentially. How do you teach critical thinking to people who have been told to sit down and listen?
Well, I think it depends on the classroom. I know many teachers who encourage you to consider many different points of view and have debates about the different points of view. It's important for, I think one of the interesting things, or one of the important things about media literacy is that it's very much a questioning, an inquiry approach. It's not saying to people, this is how you must believe. Instead, it's saying, let's look at what the information is and let's think about it, how you view it, and to consider some of the questions I just posed to you. You know, where did this come from? What's missing? How might people other than you think about this? And encourage youth to express their different views and really talk to each other about these different views and debate some of their different views, which allows them to come to some very different conclusions often about some of the biases that they may come in with, or realizing that they have, this is a very active role that they must play, that listening, that being a consumer involves critical thinking and involves analyzing and evaluating the things that you are hearing and becoming someone who questions and is a bit more skeptical about information, willing to reach beyond the basic information that you're seeing and questioning. What do I really believe here? What are some questions I could ask about this? Do I know everything that I need to know?
Yeah, I think it used to be that we naively, as consumers of media, thought, well, if it's in print, it must be true.
Yes.
That might be fairly recent. I think when our country first started, the news media was anybody who wanted to write gossip. And maybe people didn't take it so seriously. But then we went through a period where journalism was respected, and if it was in print or if it was on television or broadcast, it must be true. What is your opinion about whether we got kind of lazy about media consumption during that process?
Well, I don't know if we got lazy. I think there was such a proliferation of information that trying to sort it became almost overwhelming. And so then you get into your silos and what has been recommended to you and what your peer group might accept, rather than thinking more broadly and trying to figure out how in the world am I going to sort all this and find the information that's most valuable to me. And initially, as you say, when there were fewer outlets, we tended to believe whatever was in print because that we didn't have the wealth of information that was bombarding us every day. There were so few. There were major sources, and even though the questions that I'm posing here should have been asked even then, now they become critical questions because we're living in such a quote-unquote information age.
Yeah. When you're working with young people in Action for Media Education, how enthusiastic are they about doing the kind of research they need to do to identify the truth, if you will?
Well, it doesn't appear to them as being, you know, a tedious job when you say the word research. You know, it sounds like they're going to have to do major work. Actually, they love taking a media literacy-based approach. They really think that this is a different way to go because they live in a media world, and to deny that, to not talk about that and go, you know, into not talk at all about what they're seeing in the media each day or how the media drives some of their opinions about everything that they're seeing in print or things they're being asked to do, this is a refreshing way to go. And they're very enthusiastic. And in our work with youth, they've been extremely enthusiastic about media literacy-driven curriculum. They just, some of the youth who have been fairly unenthusiastic about school, some of the at-risk youth, we found that they've been extremely excited about doing some of the things that these media literacy-based curriculum allow them to do. And because everybody has an opinion about the media, we can all, it allows us all to participate, and we can participate in the way that we're most comfortable. And so you're bringing in everybody to the table. And it's a very exciting kind of approach to curriculum.
Well, and it makes me wonder, I've been a professional communicator all my life, and one of the first things I learned, as you mentioned, was know your audience. And when I suspect you're teaching young people to use the media to communicate their own messages, how do you teach them to use the media with integrity?
To think about how can they capture their own creative voice, their own authentic voice, when they're creating something? What would make what they're doing, how would people receive it? Trying to draw upon both their critical and also their creative thinking about what they're creating, rather than copying everything that's out there and just having another piece of video or whatever that looks just like four others or 2,500 others that they've seen on TikTok or wherever. What can they do that would really be a creative endeavor?
When you mention TikTok and Facebook and Twitter, I wonder about your position as a researcher in media. Are you literate with all these different media platforms? How do you research them? Or are you just looking at, this is communication. We've always communicated. We just have different ways to do it. How do you manage to research all these different platforms and how they work?
Well, that's an endless job, because as you know, that the platforms are changing continuously. What was popular just a month or so ago may not be popular tomorrow. You really need to try to keep current with what youth are doing and where they're going. But I'm not sure that any parent could stay on top of that all the time. I think, and even if they're unable to do it, the basic questions never change. I think that's what I'd like to impress upon people, is that the basic questions about what you're conveying to an audience or what you are consuming in through that particular medium have not changed. Though the medium may change considerably. And the youth are leaving, and which we want to impress upon them, a digital footprint wherever they go online. So what kind of digital footprint is your child or your student leaving? And this is an important question for them to consider. How are they communicating using that tool? What does it allow them to do? What are the advantages of it? Are they making best use of it? Are they using it in a responsible and ethical way? If they were to meet this person or this group of people that they're communicating with in person, how might they communicate differently?
That's wonderful. Dr. Marilyn Cohen, we have run out of time. If you were going to leave parents and all of us who consume the media with one question or one comment, what would that be?
Well, I think it would be something that that one teenager said in a video series that we had created about talking to parents and parents and youth communication, and that was he at the end of a conversation, he said, I know that when you try to tell us something, we go, and we look like we're not interested. But he said, we always hear you. We may not show it, but we do listen. And I think there are various ways to talk to your youth about what they're finding online and actually engage with them. Show your interest in talking to them about where they're going and what they're learning, and parent mediation, parent discussion about media is critical. It's an important way to engage with your youth and to listen to them.
Dr. Marilyn Cohen, director of the Northwest Media Center, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here on Real Talk, and I believe you have a website.
Yes.
For us, what is that?
I would really like to encourage people to go to Action for Media Education, our nonprofit group that I direct, Action with a Digit 4 Media Education. It has a website, and we're on Facebook. And you can also write us at actionformediaeducation@gmail.com. It's Action Digit 4 Media Education at gmail.com.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. And thank you, dear listener, for joining us here on Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at noon or at your convenience at voiceofashon.org/realtalk. Stay tuned for the Captain's Chair with Captain Joe Ubbold.